Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Big Move podcast. I am your host, Em, from the beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. Today, I am sitting here with Victoria Ceredono. She is a journalist, blogger, and author of the best-selling book, Dia de Beauté, A Guide to Real-Life Makeup. Vic, who is considered one of the beauty journalism authorities in Brazil, as well as being one of the most renowned and sought-after digital influencers on the market, launched the blog Dia de Beauté in 2007 and was a beauty editor for Vogue magazine for 10 years, followed by Glamour for 2. Born in Sao Paulo, Brazil, she currently lives here in London. Welcome to the podcast, Vic.
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. We're over here sitting in my flat. It's a beautiful day in London. I feel like we really needed this weather.
Definitely. A proper sunny, hot day.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm so excited to chat with you. We will kick it off with a couple little icebreaker questions. Okay. The first is, what is your favorite destination for a proper holiday?
Well, that's a hard one, but I will say Brazil, actually, because New Year's in Brazil, it's my favorite. I think it's the time of the year that I really managed to switch off because everyone is actually off. And
totally.
It's just the best place to be in New Year's is in Brazil. I love an island called Fernando de Noronha, which is in the far, far, far like north of Brazil. It's paradise, amazing. So I went there for 4 years in a row for New Year's and it's magical. Okay. And there is another place that I love as well. It's Bahia. There's a little town called Trancoso, which is amazing. And that's where I'm going this year. So I'm very looking forward to it.
I am so jealous. You're so right. It's like the perfect time to kind of take off and take a break. And I imagine it must be super hot there.
Exactly. So it's our summer. So I always feel like, you know, people from the Northern Hemisphere, they don't know. I always say it's almost like if New Year's was on the 31st of June.
Sure.
Like, so you get the summer, you get that vibe, but you also feel the energy of the new year coming. So it's really special.
Oh, I'm jealous already. Okay, cool. Second icebreaker, what is your favorite London coffee shop?
Well, I don't really drink coffee. I don't know. I don't like coffee, but I love tea.
Okay.
So that's my thing. And I will say the Mariage Frere tea shop in Covent Garden.
Ooh.
It's amazing if you like tea. It's just a mind-blowing, like, huge place. They have a huge tea menu. It's really nice.
Okay, that sounds really nice. What's your go-to order?
I love green tea.
Okay.
So that's always my go-to. But they have so many options that I normally have, like, 3 different ones.
Okay, I love it. Amazing. So we'll kind of get into your background, where you're from, cities you've lived. You're so well traveled. But first and foremost, you are originally from Brazil, obviously. Can you tell us a bit more about like exactly where you're from and what it was like growing up there?
Yes. So I'm from São Paulo, which is it's not the capital of Brazil per se, but it's the biggest city. So it's, you know, it's a huge metropolis. And I love São Paulo. I'm a very big fan of it. I've always liked it. It's not just because I don't live there anymore. You know how it is when you don't live in the place. You're like, oh, that's actually nice. Yeah. I always loved it. I think São Paulo has a really fast pace. It's very vibrant. It's very busy and always, you know, a lot of things happening. It's very culturally rich. There are so many amazing restaurants. I have to say, for me, I haven't been to all the cities in the world, but I'm sure São Paulo is one of the best in the world to eat because not only we have amazing talents in, you know, the whole like culinary world, There is a lot of immigration in Brazil, obviously. It's an immigrant country, and we have so many huge communities of Lebanese, Japanese, Italian, everything. So we have everything, and it's a crazy mix. And then when you mix that with the native Brazilian, so interesting. So yeah,
it's that is an amazing place. I didn't realize it was such a melting pot. What kind of food is Brazil kind of typically known for?
Well, Brazil is massively huge. I think people don't have this idea of how big Brazil is. I always compare it to the US because it's really big, and you know, you feel like it could be so many countries inside this one big country. So it really depends, because depending on where you are in Brazil, you will have different typical foods. I think the most well-known Brazilian dish is feijoada, okay. Which is like a bean, black bean stew.
Okay.
I don't really love feijoada because I don't love beans.
Okay.
But I love picadinho, so that would be my favorite, which is meat with kind of like a stew kind of that you have with rice and this kind of chips that is really also particular in Brazil. Very interesting. But also, we have many good examples. Pão de queijo is amazing. Okay. Brigadeiros, the little sweets, that is amazing. I have a friend who does it in London.
Okay.
And everyone that tries it, they like, oh my God, I cannot live with this anymore.
Oh my gosh, then, where is this in London?
Yeah, I will introduce you to that. and then obviously caipirinha, which is our, you know, national drink.
Cocktail, yes.
Cocktail, okay. Yes, with cachaça. That I absolutely love it.
Is yes. It rum-based or is it a different...
No, cachaça, it's like a rum, but it's made from sugarcane.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's our kind of national liquor.
Okay, amazing. I feel like I could use one right now. okay, so you grew up in Brazil.
Basically, it sounds like I just grew up eating. Just talking about food.
No, we love it. I'm such a foodie myself. So grew up in Brazil. Did you go to university in Brazil or did you go somewhere else?
Yes, so I was basically just stayed put in São Paulo. So I was born in São Paulo, went to school in São Paulo, went to university in São Paulo. When you are born in Brazil, you feel like... I always had this thing with traveling just because you just want to see the world, but everything is so far and you tend to sometimes even prioritize traveling abroad instead of just traveling inside the country,
sure.
Which is something very funny that after I moved to London, I was like, oh my God, I know so little about my own country. And nowadays I really try to go around and explore more. But yeah, I did everything in São Paulo and then I moved to London, but I think we'll get there. But
so,
it's just basically a really São Paulo life.
Sure.
My family is all from São Paulo. My friends are in São Paulo. So very kind of basic.
Totally. So when and then what prompted your move to London?
So I always loved London and my mother as well. And my godmother lives here. So I've always came to London a lot. I came for 1 month when I was 14 to study English. I came with my sister for 3 months in 2010. And it's a place I really wanted to live properly at some point. And then at some point, my husband decided to do an MBA. And he was applying, obviously, you apply to all the business schools around, not just one. But I was like, it has to be London, it has to be London.
Sure.
And so when he was accepted, I said, okay, it's decided. We don't even need to wait for the other replies. Let's go to London.
Okay.
So I convinced him that it was definitely the best option and he trusted me because he didn't know London as well as I did. He had only been here for like 2 days. So we did it. Yeah.
Okay. And how long ago was that?
6 years ago.
Okay. So 6 years. You've been here a good chunk of time.
Good chunk of time. But I've always... been back and forth to Brazil a lot.
Sure.
I think I go to Brazil around 6 times a year.
Oh, wow. That's great, though. It's nice that you're able to do that.
Yes. I really love it. I think I'm a bit spoiled because I really don't miss it. And I think I would definitely miss it if I didn't go as often.
Right.
Even though I know it's really strange because I feel like I live here, but I'm always there. But I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I go a lot because of work. But I'm happy. I'm glad that I can, you know, I don't miss that many things. I get to go to a lot of weddings. I get to see my family a lot. I get to see my friends. So, and also for my work, especially for my own channels, it's really important that I keep this connection with Brazil.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's good. And that's then I great. Obviously travel a lot around here as well. So I feel like 6 years in London, but not that I've been, you know, in London for that long.
I feel like that's so true for so many of us that move here. You know, we travel a lot, then we go back and forth with home. So you're right. It's like sometimes we feel like we're not actually even here. So kind of looking back at your initial transition, so I guess 6 years ago when you were moving from Brazil to London, were there any like pain points or any like challenges you faced that maybe you kind of like weren't expecting?
I think I was quite lucky for a few reasons. First, I was moving to a place that I really wanted to move and that I knew already very well. I think that really helps. And obviously moving with a partner makes things easier because you have a companion.
Yep.
And we also had, luckily, a few friends already here. So that made everything so much easier. But it was a really a huge change in our routines, because then I was used to working, you know, not even 9 to 5. It was more like so many long, long, long hours at the magazine in Brazil. So I didn't really have control of my time. I was there a lot. And my husband was working a lot as well. And then suddenly we are here and I have a lot of time on my hands and I'm staying home a lot. And then he's going to business school, which is a completely different life. It's like going back to school. So you are meeting all these people and you have all these new kind of activities. And I was just focused on building my network here because I didn't really know anyone here from the beauty industry.
Right.
And in Brazil, I was very established and I had the most amazing job and position that I could. But then I moved here and I didn't know anyone. So it was really challenging in that sense of just building everything again. But I loved it because I felt so excited for very little things that I wasn't getting excited anymore about. So it kind of renewed my love for what I do. That was really good. But it's just funny when you get, you know, you don't realize when you're in your kind of normal environment with family, friends, where you grew up, and then you have your partner. But suddenly when it's just the two of you, you really, you know, the thing I learned the most was that I don't need to share everything with my husband. Because before I was sharing things with, you know, my friends, my coworkers, and then some things I would share with him. But then sometimes I was just by myself the whole day and then I was sharing literally everything with him and he would be like, but why do you even care about this? I'm like, no, I don't care. I'm just sharing. It's like, then I understood, like, you know, some things you talk to your friends about, something.
Yeah. No, you're so right. And some things you need girlfriends. I can relate to that when I came over here because, right, you have your companion and partner, which is amazing, but I know that I was just like craving like girlfriends to just like go and chat to about, you know, just girly stuff.
Exactly.
Girly things.
Yeah, yeah. It's important. It's important. So, and that it's hard. Even I think also we're very lucky moving in a time where communication is so easy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, WhatsApp groups, I am on all of them. I said to my friends when I moved, don't you dare create a new WhatsApp group without me. And they said, but, you know, when we are going to meet and we're just deciding logistics, I'm like, no, I want to know everything. I want to know everything. Who's late, who's not, who's coming.
Oh my God, I love that.
Where you're going. So, yeah, I'm very kind of, it makes me feel connected to
Yeah,
them.
Absolutely. We want to be kept in the loop. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what do you love most about London life?
I love everything about London. I am such a big fan of London. I just love living here so much. Obviously, the weather could be tricky. But then again, I think I'm very spoiled because I don't get to spend so many long kind of too many days here. I always know when I'm going out. So I appreciate everything. I appreciate summer. I love to see how people get so happy and I find it very, you know, everyone is so enthusiastic, but I really love autumn. I love winter. Love winter. And I love the fact that you have these different moods for each season, which is something we don't have in Brazil. Brazil is mainly summer. And then we have this random winter that is not really winter. So I love, love, love knowing that, you know, now summer is almost over, but then I'm looking forward to fall. And then, yeah, you know, it starts to get cold, and then the fireplace, you know, doing cozy things. Yeah. I just think it feels so much more dynamic,
sure,
the life, because you know you're not always doing the same things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know, I think seasonality is so important. And summer and fall is kind of like the best time in London. Well, and spring when it starts to warm up, because you're right. People literally, they go crazy. Like, they're out at the pub at 1 p.m. and onward having a beer on like literally a Monday. They don't care any day.
If it's sunny, it doesn't matter, because your boss is not going to work, so you don't need to work as well. So everyone is out.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. I love seeing that.
So we'll kind of get into your career, your background there. So when and where did your career kind of really start for you? Did you like always love everything fashion and beauty, or what did that look like?
Yes, I've always been obsessed with fashion and beauty, to be honest. I always loved makeup. My mother didn't really wear makeup, and she was so confused with me as like a child. She was like, where is this coming from? Who are you? But yeah, I always loved it. I really don't know why. And I always loved reading magazines and whatever I could get my hands on. So all the makeup books I could buy, and obviously all the international magazines. So I think that really helped as well with the English language for me.
Sure.
I studied English growing up, but as well, like reading about it a lot since forever. Obviously, when I was growing up, there was no internet, no YouTube, all these things, no blogs.
Right.
But I was always reading about it, and I decided very early on that I wanted to be in this world. There was a brief moment that I thought maybe doing dermatology, because I loved skincare, mm-hmm, all these things. But then when I realized I would have to go through medical school, I was like, oh no, actually, no, that's not what I want. And I really wanted something that had that was dynamic, because I really love, you know, not knowing what my day is going to be like. And then I understood that journalism was the way to be a fashion and beauty journalist. And then I started my journalism university. In Brazil, the way it works with degrees and university is a bit different. I'm not going to get into that because it's a bit boring. But I entered university when I was 17, straight from school. And I knew since the beginning that I was aiming at, you know, fashion, beauty. Mm-hmm. But my teachers and the whole university worked, they thought I was a complete freak, like a lunatic, as what is fashion and beauty? This is so, you know,
really
superficial. Yeah. And what? Huh? So I thought on my whole first year, I thought I was going to have to do this, you know, go and be a serious journalist, mm-hmm, covering, I don't know, economy or, you know, the city, metropolis, whatever, to then kind of go into what I wanted. But luckily, I had a lot of connections through my family and people that we knew. And I ended up going to São Paulo Fashion Week,
okay,
for a work experience, sort of, when I was 18. And so I did that for 6 seasons, and it was the total highlight of my year. It was my sister and I, and we were doing it, and we were two, you know, teenagers, just so excited to be there and to see all of that. And that was when I understood that completely it's what I wanted to do. So actually, I mean, sorry, I got the story a bit confused, because that was actually even before I started doing my university. Mm-hmm. And because of that, because I had done that, I knew a few people, and then I started just, you know, harassing them for internships.
Yeah.
Then I got one at a fashion website in Brazil that was the biggest fashion website at the time, from a really well-known journalist.
Okay.
And she took me as an intern, and there was no beauty section on the website, so I kind of built that, because I loved beauty and fashion, but I was the only one who loved beauty. So I started doing that, and then I became kind of like an intern editor in a way. Mm-hmm. And 1 year after that, I was still doing that. And then my a former boss of mine went to Vogue, so she commissioned my first piece. And then I was freelancing for Vogue for 2 years, and then I went full-time, left the website, went to Vogue. But 1 year after I started Vogue, I started my blog. So it's kind of the three, 1 year after the other. So my first internship, I was still doing that Vogue, still doing both blog.
Wow.
So I always did a lot of things at the same time.
You're always juggling.
Always. It's the story of my life.
Yeah.
I think because I really like to be dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like things to be boring. So it was really interesting because I started my blog really early on, and I always did my blog along with the other things. Mm-hmm. So when I was full-time at Vogue, I went to be at Vogue full-time, and then I was still doing my blog, and I was doing both. And then when I moved to Brazil, I mean, then I became beauty editor at Vogue, and then I was there for a few more years, and then we moved to London.
Okay.
And that's when I kind of changed it a bit, and my blog became commercial, because I couldn't do anything commercial with my blog before. So it was a very serious hobby, but it wasn't a business until then. But it was really big, and you know, I had this luck of being one of the first beauty blogs in Brazil, and I guess in the world as well, but in Portuguese, so it was mainly in Brazil. And that was really interesting, because then I kind of started, I shifted a little bit and started doing my blog as a proper business and building on that. So, yeah.
Right. And because you started your blog before blogs were like even a thing. This was back in like what? Your blog started in like 2007?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's going to be 12 in October.
Oh my gosh. That's so exciting.
It's crazy. And you know, when I started, I just wanted to, because obviously being a journalist, and I was already writing for a print publication, and I was writing for a digital, you know, website. Mm-hmm. And I just loved the language and the approach of the blogs as in a really personal, you know, filter. Because as a journalist, you are very removed from the equation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, nowadays, everything changed so much. But back then, it was really like it was the magazine voice. It was the website voice. And I liked the idea of having my own space. And the way you communicate directly with people and you get their feedback instantaneously. So it was really interesting. And that's why I started doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. But then it grew. So with both your roles at Vogue and Glamour, were you covering specific topics, or what did that kind of look like?
So with Vogue, I was doing beauty. So I was freelancing for the first 3 years freelancing, and then 7 years as beauty editor. Okay. And I loved just being completely focused on the beauty and thinking of the whole section. That was so amazing and a huge, huge, huge learning experience for me. And with Glamour, I was with Glamour for the past 2 years.
And that was Glamour in the UK.
All Brazil. Glamour Brazil as well. Okay. So I moved from Brazilian Vogue to Brazilian Glamour. And with Glamour, I was international editor at large, because I was obviously in London.
Right.
And it made sense for, because then I could do Fashion Week coverage for them. I could do, you know, whenever I have an event or press trip that is relevant, I could also do it for them, not only beauty, but I had my column on the beauty section.
Okay.
But now I left. So now I am, after 14 years of Condé Nast, I am a freelancer.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Really.
Congrats. I literally messaged you because I was like, so you're still at Glamour, right? And you were like, I literally just left about 5 minutes ago. I'm like, okay, we have our facts straight. So congrats on making the move.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I'm just excited actually. And I actually wanted for a while now to do some freelancing work in London for like the UK market and do more things in English. Because that's the biggest issue I have, is the language barrier.
Right.
So it's really complicated. I cannot, you know, I can't prioritize English because my main audience is Brazilian.
It's Brazilian, right.
And it's really tricky because I try to do both, but, you know, never doing both properly. So yeah, I wanted to do more like writing in English. So let's see how it goes.
That makes a lot of sense. So you've been juggling both, it sounds like, your entire career, running your blog, holding these jobs. How have you kind of been able to balance, like, have you been able to balance them both?
I think the secret, and the older I get, I feel like I'm getting wiser. And I mean, thank God, we hopefully do get wiser with age. But I think it's just the reality is you cannot, there is no ideal balance, and there is no way you can do everything 100%. And it's really tricky for me because I'm really invested 100% in everything I do. So in my mind nowadays, what I try to do and organize myself is, whatever I'm doing at that moment, I'm 100% doing it, but then I will switch to and do something else, and then something else, and then something else. And I always have my giant to-do list, and it's impossible to do everything. And then I just, you know, I try not to put so much pressure on myself. Also delegating and having a team.
Yeah.
That makes such a huge difference. So my team is all in Brazil, and it's a lot of, you know, WhatsApp working. I send voice messages to them the whole day, and we decide everything, you know, kind of virtually, which really helps. I think it's the only way that I can actually do this is because of the tools we have. But it brings other issues because I'm always on my phone. I always have things to do. So also learning to switch off when I have to switch off, and I'd be like, guys, okay, this is what I could do for today. What I couldn't, we'll leave it for tomorrow. And, you know, the world is not going to end.
Right.
You can tell, you know, when things are actually urgent.
Right.
And when they can wait.
Yeah, you that's know? Such so a good point.
I think you have to be a bit more.
Yeah. Is there a certain time of day where you're like, okay, I'm turning off. It can wait till the next day. Like, I'm ending my day here. Because, you know, we work for ourselves. You work remotely. So how does that kind of work?
The time difference can be a bit tricky because we are 4 hours ahead in London. So obviously my mornings are really calm, but I am really bad because I like to go to sleep late and wake up late. So my routine is non-existent. There is no day that is the same. But normally my mornings are calmer, and then in the evening everything is happening because everyone is online. So literally 9 p.m. is the worst time of the day.
Okay.
Because it's 5 p.m. in Brazil. People are like, okay, wrapping up everything. Yep. And they are like trying to decide everything that wasn't decided. So if I am, you know, not doing anything at home by myself, I will still be working. If my husband is already back, I say, guys, only if it's really, really urgent. If not, please don't message me because I cannot see it now.
Right.
Because my husband gets a bit annoyed at me because he says, like, literally, you cannot work 24 hours a day.
Agree.
And sometimes when we are out having dinner, for example, and there's something urgent that I need to see, I just, you know, excuse myself, go to the toilet, and then I just, you know, go get my phone, reply to anything that has to be to be done. But yeah, it's just there. It's just
managing it.
Always managing. Yeah, it's eternal management.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, it's doable. And I think if you like what you do, you have a lot of work, but at least, you know, it's in the end, and at the end of the day, you feel happy.
Right. It's work you enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, sometimes you want to, you know.
Yeah. It's not always rainbows and butterflies, but for the most part, if you're passionate about what you're working on. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. So what is behind the name of your blog and your book? You have a best-selling book, Insane. So what's behind the name Dia de Beauté? Am I saying it right?
Well, it's Dia de Beauté, but I mean, it's a nightmare, this name. I love the name and I love the concept that I will tell you about, but it's just an impossible name because it's a mix of Portuguese and French. I've always been obsessed with France, Paris, French language, so I wanted to have this touch of French. So Beauté is beauty in French, and then Dia de means like day off.
Right.
So it's like, it's day of beauty. It's like beauty day.
Okay.
In the end, it's like, it's what it means. But the idea behind is that when I was growing up, with my friends, and we would have New Year's Eve. So as I said, New Year's is a really big moment in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And we loved doing all these kind of beauty treatments and rituals to kind of like prepare for the new year. So yeah. We would do, you know, DIY recipes. We would do crazy stuff. And also before parties. But that's when I was like 13 years old, like very young. But I always loved the idea of the rituals and taking time for yourself and taking the time to take care of yourself. And right. Even if it's just, you know, lying down with cucumbers in your eyes,
yeah.
On your eyes. I have a problem with in and on. really big problem.
I love it. Okay.
But, yeah, you know, even if something minor, I think it's, I've always been fascinated by it. So mm-hmm. We would call these kind of moments, we would call them Dia de Beauté. So, oh, let's do our little, you know, beauty day.
Right.
So when I created my blog, I wanted to bring this idea of whether you're doing a beauty ritual, a beauty treatment, skincare moment, or applying your makeup, you know, bringing a touch of that to your everyday life. Because, you know, you are going to take a shower every day. So why not make it a bit more special? You are going to, you know, if you don't wear any makeup, why not do a tiny bit just to make you feel better? Because I think when you look in the mirror and you see a better version of yourself, you do feel better. Like mm-hmm. the feeling and, you know, the mind, the power it has on our self-esteem is real.
Yeah.
And I've always been fascinated by all of that. So that's what I wanted to bring with the blog. And, you know, that's actually been my whole kind of mission in life.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I started, this word literally didn't exist. But now I see it's empowering women to kind of learn and know how to do it themselves and kind of, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a power to know and to, you know, feel better.
Yeah, you're right. It makes such a difference. And it sounds like you had that like idea of self-care down at a pretty young age. So it makes so much sense. What was that process like with launching your book?
So that was a really, really, really special career, kind of really amazing, because I think every journalist has the secret, not so secret desire to write a book. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was something I was going to do later on, because I knew I wanted to dedicate myself a lot to it. But then when the proposal came along, it was with a really big publishing house in Brazil. And it's literally like, if they come to you, you're not going to say no. So I wasn't ready in my mind to, you know, tackle that. But I was like, okay, I will be ready. So that was actually right after I moved to London. And it was a 2-year process from, you know, proposal and to the book being launched. And that was 4 years ago. So my book is 4, which is crazy. But the idea of the book is to be a makeup guide for, you know, the real life.
Right.
So kind of trying to demystify, because it's crazy how still today I see, you know, there's so much content, there is so many videos, so many things you can read about makeup, see skincare, everything, and people are still lost. Mm-hmm. So, and I always judge from my friends, because mm-hmm. they are kind of my ideal, not ideal audience, but obviously if someone is a beauty junkie like mm-hmm. I am,
right.
I am kind of the obvious audience. I am myself. And any beauty junkie, you know, will like it.
Yeah.
But my friends, they're like zero into makeup, skincare, anything. And so they are kind of like the people I want to teach.
Yeah, yeah.
And to make, to convince them that it's worth it. So yeah, the book is again kind of... But it's a really nice, it's like a hardcover book.
Okay,
so
amazing.
We wanted to make it really visual and mm-hmm. very inspiring. Not too dictating, you know, not like this is how you do it, because that's not my style. My style is very free. And
right. And it was printed in, obviously, Brazilian Portuguese.
Yes. So it's only available in Brazil and in Portugal, because then it's Portuguese as well.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe one day, I don't know. But yeah, now I also have plans for a second book. So
that's another very exciting. Big news. Okay, cool. We'll have
cannot
to look out.
Talk a lot about it yet, but yeah, it's happening. I'm really excited.
Okay, amazing.
This one maybe will have it you know,
maybe in
internationally.
The UK.
Okay, cool. That would be amazing. That's a big, big goal.
Yeah,
big goal.
Absolutely. So you have found so much success with your blog, your social media following. You have over 500,000 people following you on Instagram. What do you attribute most of your like success to with that? Is it having both of those huge markets as your audience, or?
I think it's a lot of timing, to be honest. And I think I was really lucky doing it so early on, because when you do something very early on, you always have that benefit of, you know, being there before and even inspiring people who will come after you. So I think that's a big advantage, but you need to learn how to first never take anything for granted, especially in this business that we are working, you know, because everything changes the whole time and there is no way you are, you know, in a pedestal and you made it. There is no making it, because things are changing all the time. New people are coming all the time. So you need to know. Actually, there's no way of knowing, but you need to try to maintain your relevancy and to, you know, never, for example, underestimate a new platform, because blogging obviously was huge. And then YouTube came along and then Instagram came along. And nowadays, blogging is not the biggest thing. You know, even for me, even though my blog is very strong and I still think it's fundamental to have good content on the blog, and I will do it. I still do it, even though it's not as many people reading, because now people are on Instagram and people are on YouTube. So you have to also be where people are. Mm-hmm. And you can never think like, oh, no, I got this. This new thing is never going to be, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Because that's when people really... Even I see that even with magazines, because I can tell from both sides, obviously. I saw the whole change in this media landscape from both sides.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, because I remember in the beginning when I was talking to, you know, other journalists, and they were so skeptical, but not even just skeptical. They were so kind of like snooty.
Sure.
You know, about, you know, bloggers. I was
right.
Like, remember, I'm a blogger as well. Don't say like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's there was this thing, and people were saying like, oh, it's never going to last. You know, it's just a thing. It's like a momentous thing. And you can never think like that. That's literally the worst thing you can think.
Right. And look at the landscape now. It's booming in all parts of the world. And I like what you said too about like, you can never get too comfortable and like kind of rest on your laurels, so to speak.
Exactly.
Like,
that's the expression.
You get to like a certain number, whatever. It's like, I know I feel this way. I feel like you have to constantly reinvent yourself. It's so oversaturated right now. There's so much competition. If you are not fresh and on it, like, you're going to fall back. And it's a lot of pressure, and it's not an easy thing to do. But you're so right there.
Yeah. I think, again, if you like what you're doing, it's a lot of pressure, and it's, you know, so many times in this whole kind of journey. So there were so many moments where I was, oh my God, what am I even doing? Is this the right thing? But I think that when you are excited and enthusiastic about, you know, the subject, people can see that.
Yeah.
So when you're tired of doing something and you're just doing it mechanically, or you're doing it because you found this formula that works for you, I think that's when you kind of start losing it.
Right.
And I think you need to then find, because you started for a reason.
Right.
And you started because there were things that you liked. So kind of trying to find that again. And I think nowadays I see that so clearly, because on my kind of journalist career, I did that, not because I wanted to, but because I moved countries and I had to kind of start from scratch.
Yeah.
And even though it was super hard, it was so amazing, because I felt, you know, that kind of renewed sense of excitement and purpose.
Yeah.
So every time now I feel like I'm stuck or I'm in a rut or whatever, I just try to, you know, rewire my brain and get that kind of excitement back.
Yeah, and kind of like recharge.
Yeah.
So on that note of kind of the landscape changing and evolving, especially from your seat, which is so interesting, UK, Brazil, what's like the biggest way you've seen the blogging world kind of change and evolve?
I really don't know. But I do think about that a lot. And what I see for a fact is that we cannot hope for things to be just one. I don't know if it makes sense, but for example, before you could just have one blog and everything was there and all your readers were concentrated there.
Right.
Now everything is pulverized.
Sure.
So everything is pulverized in terms of, you know, all the platforms that we have available and that you should be using them. Because, again, you have more chances to, you know, make it right, get it right if you try all the platforms. You have different ways of talking about the same subject. So if you're doing a podcast, a video, writing something or doing a photo on the same thing, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it's a different content kind of outcome.
Right.
So I think it's interesting in terms of, you know, the options we have to explore,
right.
but also in terms of numbers, because, you know, it's harder now to, there was a time where you had five bloggers. So obviously it's easier to grow. It's easier to have bigger numbers. But I think as long as you have a dedicated, engaged audience, you know, all these words nowadays are so, you know, engagement is mm-hmm. everything people talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. You know, like if you're influencing your group of friends, there's already something there. So you don't need to you know, strive to reach everyone.
Right.
You just need to be happy
yeah.
to reach anyone. And I remember when I started my blog, that was kind of like, because obviously when I started my Instagram, I already had the people who followed me mm-hmm. from the blog. But when it was for me like day zero, mm-hmm. I remember when I got my first comment, when I was seeing like, oh, there are, wow, 100 people reading what I'm writing. That feeling was so amazing. And just like knowing you helped one person.
Yeah.
For me, that's it. So sometimes, you know, when you share a tip and someone will say like, oh, that's such a useless tip. And someone else will say like, oh, amazing. That tip changed my life. I'm like,
right.
If one person likes it,
right.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, there are so many people doing, you know, content, but still so many people wanting content.
Right.
That I think is literally not going anywhere. I just think it's kind of resetting.
Yeah.
Reorganizing
the
landscape.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think instead of having one big voice that is, you know, the authority that mm-hmm. they say something and everyone is following it. It's like many different voices.
I think that's really great advice. I don't think it's said enough, right? It's like you'll find your niche. You'll find people that are finding value from it, you know. That's a really good tip. And that was kind of one of my next question was, do you have any other kind of like tips for success for anyone that's like kind of starting out?
I think it's so kind of... It's a boring advice, but I think it's a real one. It's just be authentic mm-hmm. because it's really hard to pretend for too long. So just start, you know, as you are and find what you like to do, but mm-hmm. also challenge yourself to get a little, you know, out of your comfort zone. So for example, I'm a writer. That's what I like to do the most. Videos, I don't mind. I actually think it's easy. It's for me, it's easier to do a video than to photo. Photos for me mm-hmm. are the hardest thing. So I had, when Instagram came along, I had to learn, you know, the whole photo outfit of the day, you know, all these things. Like, I'm not good with that, mm-hmm. but I had to learn. And then you learn and, you know, you don't complain. You learn and you do it. You do a little bit. You find what you're comfortable doing and you find your kind of way and you do what you do what you can, you know. I don't think people shouldn't do stuff just because they are not comfortable,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like there is a fine line between going a way of that's a bad sentence, but it's just like there is your comfort zone, mm-hmm. there is the challenge, and then there is the zone you don't want to go. And I don't think you should go there if you don't feel like it, even if your audience asks for it.
Right.
You know, I think there are limits, But you have to kind of be a bit flexible.
Yeah, no, sense. That makes so much sense. You just have to find what works for you. I know I go through that too. I see these vloggers on these like amazing, like beautiful vacation trips, and you get this pressure to do the same and go and like create the beautiful travel content. It's like travel content's actually not my jam. Like now I'm kind of more into beauty. So it's like, it's just finding your way, finding what you're comfortable with and finding what works for you. I think
that's it.
Yeah. I love it. So a couple last questions for you. What are some of your cult favorite beauty brands, like diehard?
That's the hardest question for me because I'm such a beauty junkie and my dream was to live inside a cosmetic shop. That's my actual dream. So really hard because I just love a lot of brands. But I think for makeup, I would say there are so many brands I have an emotional connection with, like MAC, because I grew up kind of lusting for MAC.
Me too.
And just couldn't get it because we didn't have it in Brazil when I was growing up. So I remember like my first time, the first time I actually came to London was my first big international trip, and I remember exactly the products that I bought. So I think with MAC, with NARS, with Laura Mercier, I have this emotional connection with this brand.
Yeah.
But then obviously Chanel, Dior.
Yes.
Oh my God, I could go on forever. And then there are so many new brands that I love as well. I just love products.
Yeah. How about skincare? Do you have any like top few brands?
Yes. I mean, I have some skincare products that I've been using for so long, like the Bioderma micellar water.
Yep.
The Vichy, actually, Mineral 89 is not even that new, that old, but I've been using it like nonstop for a long time. Clinique, another huge emotional connection because I remember my mother used to use the three-step.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first skincare products that I had.
Yeah.
And then it's nice because being a beauty journalist for so long, I also had a lot of really amazing experiences with those brands. So I remember like interviewing the Clinique scientist. I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. Yeah. I did a lipstick in collaboration with MAC.
Oh, that's exciting.
The first time around. So 2 years ago, okay. I did for Brazil. It was amazing. Ugh. Like such a...
That's like the dream.
Yes. Yeah. Another like huge career kind of
dream
achieved. So yeah, I love products. But I just think, you know, especially with skincare, it's something that it's booming now, obviously. Yeah. And I think people expect the same instant reward feeling they get from makeup.
Yeah.
And that's not the point of skincare. So I think there's a lot of education to be done for people to understand that have this daily habit and you will be thankful in 10 years time.
Yeah.
It's not like tomorrow.
Yeah. More long term. You know. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Final question for you. Are there any podcasts, resources or books that you kind of love or find inspiration from?
Well, I used to read and watch and, you know, listen to so much more before. Nowadays, I find it so hard. And it's one thing that I really want to organize in my life, to have my moments to actually sit and read or listen to something. So, yeah, I feel like all my references, if I say it now, they feel a bit old.
Right.
Which is very sad. Well, I need to...
You're a busy gal. You got a lot going on.
I think I need to do so many things in my day that I don't, you know, feed my brain.
Yeah.
Which is bad. That's bad. I need to sort that out.
No, totally. Anything exciting coming up blog-wise, book-wise, career-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe freelancing,
which
is something really new for me. So I'm excited for that, to see how it goes. With the blog, I mean, just always trying to, I have more content in English, but it's a bit hard. But IGTV is a good one that I did a few videos in English that I think did well. So maybe that would be more amazing. Of that. And then the second book, which is exciting.
We'll have to look out for that. Thank you so much for coming on. This was such an awesome conversation. Before you go, though, where can everybody keep up with you, find your blog, find your Insta, all that stuff?
So my Instagram is at Vic Ceridono, Ceridono. My blog is Gia De Botte, but it's easier if you just find me on Instagram and click on the link in my bio.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. And if you loved this episode, feel free to share on your social media channels, and we'll keep an eye out. Thanks again. See you soon.